The service of worship this morning has already been so inspiring. The reading was just extra inspiring. The prayers, the comments around the table make me thankful to be here in this congregation to worship. There are a lot of reasons why we ought to be thankful to be here. There are untold opportunities to do good. We are called upon, I think, as much or perhaps more than many congregations for unusual opportunities of service. And we have one of those coming up this month. This month contains 5 Sundays in it. And that's unusual for February. In fact, February only has 5 Sundays in it once every 28 years. So it was over a quarter of a century ago when there was a 5th Sunday in February. The elders are planning to make that a special day in a more than one way. And they've decided to set the whole contribution on that day aside as a contribution for Zambia. And the work of Zambia itself is unusual. And you'll be given an opportunity, but I wanted to make mention of it now. You need to be thinking about planning to give extra. The elders are hoping for us to reach a goal of $20,000 on that day. And they've got confidence in you. You've always come through. You need to be looking around for something to sell. Look around among some of your wife's china or things that you can sell. And but be on the lookout and figure out something between now and then that you can sell if you don't have the money. And let's make a special effort to make this contribution a reality on the 5th Sunday of this month. Turn, please, to 609 for the song of invitation. 609. In our series recently, as on the home and marriage, I feel like we need to go back and pick up a whole large group of you that we've left standing at the station platform. We've let you just kind of wave goodbye to those of us who are either on the verge of marrying or already married. And I feel like maybe we've left out a whole large portion of you who are single and looking. And we don't want to do that. Today I want to go back and pick up you and get you on this train too. There are a lot of you who are looking and asking the question, where do I start? How do I start making plans? And how do I start accomplishing the selection of a mate? How do I go about it? And many of you do not know. And you're frustrated and you need some instruction and some help. I figured the only way we could get to all of us is by taking a Sunday morning in this series to help you with some very simple but very important matters along this line. There's not much in the Bible about it. That is, about this thing of courting. The Bible just doesn't spend much time telling you how to court before marriage. It tells you how to act in all of your relationships. But it doesn't spend much time telling about how to court prior to marriage, because I think they didn't court a lot before they married back then. It was arranged by their daddy and mama, and that was about the extent of it. That's not peculiar to the Bible times or to Bible lands. Sometimes it's in more recent times and in nearer lands than the Bible lands that same process is followed. It's a bit unusual in our American culture for it to be followed. However, my mom and daddy had a similar courtship as that. I don't think my daddy ever dated my mother until they were engaged. He was on his way from one gospel meeting to another and passed through Decatur, Alabama. And he called her up and said, Miss Bessie, I wonder if you would think it'd be a good thing for us to marry. And she said, bless her beautiful heart, she said, well, I think not. And my daddy, being the go-getter that he is, he said, let me talk to your mama. And he said, Mrs. Simrell, would it be all right if I married your daughter? And Mrs. Simrell said, well, I think that would be lovely. So that was the engagement. And you know where they went on their honeymoon? They went to another gospel meeting, and they were there in that meeting during their honeymoon. Well, I want you to know, I was not raised in that generation. I was raised in your generation, and I have some things I want to talk to you about today. 4 years ago, when I was asked to come here to speak on a Bible seminar, I saw all the things that were happening on campus, or I saw some of the things. I didn't see all of the things, but I saw some of the things that were happening, and it stirred my poetic mind, and I wrote a poem entitled Harding in the Spring. When I saw the flowers in the trees and the birds and the bees here at Harding in Surcease, I saw men on their knees crying, honey, won't you please give my heart ease? So she gives him a little squeeze as they swing gently in the breeze, much like monkeys swinging in trees, making plans for little chimpanzees. And I wish that were the way it really was. I wish that told the whole story. But it doesn't tell the whole story, does it? Because there are a lot of people that are not swinging in those trees and making plans. They're frustrated, and they don't quite know which way to turn. There are some false expectations that I'd like to discuss with you, and then I'd like to tell you about three relationships that are genuine and wholesome. There are about three or four extremes that I'd like to warn you against. One of these I'll call the frantic, frustrated formula fumblers. These are the four F's, not in a real bad sense, but these are people who are perhaps inexperienced. They're likely to jump into a courtship, have a very overwhelming experience. They're swept off their feet. They find themselves engaged. They then find themselves all of a sudden broken up. The ring has been turned back. And all of this takes place within the first 5 days of school. No longer than a week at the most. And then these guys come to me wanting me to give them a formula to show them how it failed. And they come there and their countenance is all dropped and they don't know what they've done wrong. And they come and sit down and ask me this question, what did I do wrong? And I have a tendency to ask them, what year are you talking about? Or did you do something wrong? What was the problem? And I said, I don't know what it was. And they expect me to sit down and give them a formula as though it were some equation or some mathematical formula or some chemical analysis, you know, and lay it all out on paper, step one, step two, step three. And usually these people have not dated very often. In high school, they didn't date. They're immature. They have not developed the social grace of dating. Perhaps they waited until they could come to Harding to date a Christian girl. And so when they finally get here, then they find this one, and all of a sudden they feel like this is the one I've been waiting on all my life, and they find someone who's responsive, and they meet head on, and then after a few days, they find themselves completely disillusioned and discouraged and disturbed. There's another group of boys in this, or girls, in this area, and these are boys, I think, probably. These are what I'd call the checklist Charlies. These are the guys that have a whole checklist of attributes that they're looking for in a woman. And you know, they go around like this when they're around you, and they go, and if you ever see a boy doing this, be careful, he's one of those checklist Charlies. And he's looking you up and down, you know, yeah, brown hair, right, brown eyes, right, and good personality, right. And here they go, making these checks on you. Now, that's not all that bad. But I would suggest that you be careful. Jimmy Allen said that he knew a boy once like that when he was here in school. And the boy was so particular and he had so many attributes that he was looking for in a wife. And Jimmy asked him, he said, what are you going to do when you find that gal and find out that she's got a list too? And he said, he's going to check you off because you're not going to be nearly as developed and as mature as she is looking for in a husband. So the main thing and the moral of that story is just simply this: make your efforts not so much in finding a good mate as in being a good mate. If you'll make yourself a checklist for things that ought to be in your life, don't worry about then finding the girl who has those things in her life. You'll recognize it if you yourself have arrived there first. But the checklist Charlies need to be careful. You need to be aware that you need not expect to find a 40-year-old developed mind and personality in the body of a 20-year-old. A lot of boys look for 20-year development in a body that's not that old. They look for 20 years of maturity in the life of a 20-year-old, and you're not going to find it. But I tell you what you can do. You can expect that and go on doing your checking, and you'll end up and leave right on, and you'll go right on out of here graduating, and you'll never find your wife, because you're not ever going to find a perfect person. But all right, but that's pretty well the first category. Then there's another group of people that I'll call the Lord will find me my mate group. The Lord's going to lead me to her. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to sit around and wait and pray. And the Lord's going to lead me to her. Well, let me tell you right offhand, there's no such promise as that in the Scriptures. You can just forget it. It's not in the Scriptures. Now, I can tell you there's a similar promise. He's promised that he'll give you your daily bread. That's a promise. But I'll tell you what's connected to it. You're going to have to work for your daily bread if you get it. He didn't say he's just going to come lay it in your lap. I can just imagine somebody saying, no, I'm not going to work. The Lord's just going to lead me to my hamburger. No, you'll starve. And you ought to starve. Paul said, if any man won't work, neither let him eat. If you translate that into courting, if any man won't court, neither let him marry. If any man won't date, neither let him marry. And I think you need to be aware of the fact that the Lord's not going to lay her in your lap or lay you in her lap. I believe this, that if you are not interested enough in marrying to look for a wife, you're not going to be interested enough in marriage to look after a wife. If you can just sit back and not do anything about it, I'd be careful. I don't know that I'd marry at all. I asked a boy once, or he asked me on campus the other day, and I asked him if I could use this as an illustration or just tell about it, and he said, yeah. He said, Brother Woodruff, I've begun to think maybe that it's a waste of time to date. He said, have you got a minute to talk? I said, yeah, I've got a minute. I was headed somewhere, but I thought, boy, this is going to be good. He said, I began to think it's a waste of time to date. He said, I think I ought to be out evangelizing and doing all this, you know, that. And he named all these things that, man, it's fantastic. You got to do that if you're going to be a Christian. You know, you got to be out doing. But he said, I think if I'll just do all that, then that the Lord will find me my mate. I said, well, don't count on it. I said, I think, frankly, if you'll find out just the answer to one question, I said, you need to ask yourself the question whether or not you're cut out to be a eunuch. Now, I said, Paul was. Paul didn't spend any time, I guess, looking for a mate because he felt that it was his gift, he said, to remain unmarried. I said, do you think that that is your gift as you look down inside your soul into your needs? Is it your gift to be a eunuch? He kind of grinned and he said, no. I said, all right, buddy, then you better get on the stick and start finding that mate. And I told him this. I said, it is never a waste of time to do that which glorifies God. Never. And I said, my wife and family are my greatest asset as a gospel preacher. And any time that I spent looking for her was time well spent. And I don't regret a single second of the time that it took chasing her or catching her because of what I got. I asked him, I said, is this girl a Christian? Oh, yeah. I said, does she have the Spirit of Christ? Oh, yeah. I said, well, man alive, go at it. That's what it's all about. That's what the Lord created you for, and that's what he created her for. So, okay, be careful. These I would refer to who think that the Lord is going to lead you to this person. You don't have to go out and do anything about it. These are the unrealistic ones. It's just unrealistic to think like that. Then there's a third group that I'd like to mention, and they're plentiful on campus. They're the ones that I'd call the Cathcart cuddling Cupids. Them and the Armstrong boys really have it going. And not all of the Armstrong boys come from Armstrong. I just mean that they'd have to have strong arms to hold on as long as they do. But you know, you wade through them out here at Cathcart or wherever it is that you have to wade through them, Mary Beth, you know, to get over there and get in the dorm. These people are probably the most experienced daters on campus. And they got that experience back in high school. And they went through the preliminaries of social graces and all and learning how to be adept at that. They went through that at an earlier age. And when they've come here, they all know who the others are, so they all get together and they just eliminate first gear. They start off in second gear and they go right on. But I tell you, that's hard on the transmission to start off in second gear. You don't do that. It's hard on the transmission as far as human associations are concerned, too. These people probably are attracted to each other physically, primarily, and maybe exclusively. And these are the cool cats when it comes to the men. They know how to be around a woman. Man, they don't sweat. Their palms don't sweat. They don't get a cramp in their stomach. They don't perspire. They're real cool. They know how to go about it. And that's good, and I'm not kicking it. But these people also are immature. They need to grow up some. They need to set their sights higher. They're probably satisfied with less from themselves and from a girl than what they should be. These people usually are only average students or below average students. They're the ones who major in campusology. And listen, some of this is not bad. Don't worry about it. I'm just simply saying that this is it's a segment of the society, and you may find yourself in that particular segment. I would suggest that these three groups represent the major part of the campus, of the people on the campus and in our community. So where do you find yourself today? Are you one of the frantic, frustrated formula fumblers? Are you one of the Lord will provide group? Are you one of the checklist Charlies? Or are you one of the Cathcart cuddling Cupids? Where are you today? Do you know where you are? Or perhaps you'll be one who is approaching it on a more sane basis and a more Christian basis that's well-rounded. I'd like to mention three of these. One of these is the side-by-side, and I'm going to demonstrate them with my hands. There's a preliminary relationship that goes before courtship, and it's this side-by-side approach. That means simply that you learn how to be with the opposite sex and be with them comfortably. Most of the time, this takes place when you're in your latter high school years, where you have friends who help you learn how to enjoy life and learn how to enjoy being with the opposite sex, to where you're not embarrassed, you don't clam up, and you don't get very panicky. And every boy ought to have a girl like that that serves as this bridge between adolescence and serious courting. Every boy, or every girl ought to have a boy like that that serves as that bridge with whom you can be with and with whom you can associate with others and just simply learn how to get along with the opposite sex. I remember when I was a boy, I had just that kind of friends, and two or three of my girlfriends, Verena Scudder and a girl by the name of Ann Stong, we used to just have the best time going places. We skated a lot together. And then they got to where they'd chase me. You know, that's about the age 12 or 13. And they'd chase me, and I'd let them think that they were really catching me. Then I'd let them catch me, and then they'd kiss me. And it wasn't anything private. They both did it together, you know. But that was all right. They thought that was the fact. They thought that was more fun. They were just like tomboys. They'd just tackle me, you know, really get vicious about it. I'd give up and they'd kiss me. Well, that was good. That was just some of the most fun times and some of the most innocent times. But now when you're in college, you don't tackle people on campus. That's not... But then there were other girls with whom I could just sit and visit and enjoy being just simply a boy. And everybody needs that. My oldest son overseas found a young lady like that. She was very wholesome. And she provided this bridge for him and he for her, where they just learned how to be boy and girl and learn how to enjoy facing life and looking out with wide-eyed expectations and just learning to be together as human beings. That's part of this game of courtship and marriage. But then you turn to the next kind of a relationship, and it's the relationship that's like this. This you might call side-by-side. This is the face-to-face relationship. And that happens when the chemicals began to react. Not only physical, but spiritual and emotional and mental and personality-wise. All these chemicals began to start percolating, and you began to turn toward each other. And the heart begins to patter, you know, a bit faster, and the blood pressure begins to rise, and you began to feel this queasy, lovely feeling that you feel like when you're falling in love. And that's a beautiful time. I spoke once over on the campus to a boys' group, and one old boy timidly raised his hand, and he said, "Yes, sir, but what happens if you turn like this and she turns like that?" And I told him, I said, "Well, you have to be prepared for that, because it very likely will happen. Very seldom do two people turn together and find out, by the way, that that's the way they want it to be for life. But you need to be prepared for that. But you also need to be prepared in mind to recognize that it's not wrong when you turn together like that and find out that there's really something going on. This is what God intended. This is God's arrangement to make people come together and to be together for lifelong partnership. You shouldn't be ashamed. You shouldn't think that it's something that's wrong. But somebody told me the other day, he said, "All I can do is think about her, and I just want to be with her 24 hours a day." Well, I just listened to him eulogize this lovely woman. And I said, "Is she a Christian girl?" "Oh, yeah, she's a Christian." "Does she have the mind of Christ?" "Oh, yeah, she's just the most..." And then he went again. I didn't get any more questions in. And I said, "Well, boy, that's it. Enjoy it, you know, enjoy it." And somebody said, "But yeah, but that just may be puppy love." That's all right. It's real to the puppy. So just enjoy it. That's part of it. And God wants you to enjoy that. And if you're a Christian and she's a Christian and you've got this thing going, well, you'll know, and you just enjoy it and enjoy being together in that face-to-face relationship. But that's not the final. There's this here, the side-by-side, that turns to this, but the ultimate that we're looking for is this one, where you're back-to-back. That's where real oneness comes. When you can find yourself standing like sentries stand in enemy territory, protecting each other's blind side. That's marriage. And you find yourself making up for her deficiencies. You find yourself making up where she lacks, and she making up where you lack. You find yourself protecting her, and her protecting him. You find each one of you then looking out for the other's best interest, and you do it in such a way that you more or less stand at each other's back and protect that unprotected part of each of us. And each of us has that unprotected part. We have that unfulfilled part. And if you'll see to it that your life takes upon that quality in your dating, let me say this in closing, that these are not phases through which you pass. You don't pass out of this relationship here of enjoying life and going places and having Cokes and all after church and sitting together in church and being friends. You don't pass out of that into this, to where all you want to do then is just be together face to face and neck to neck. That's not what it's about. And then you don't pass out of that once you're married into this, where there's not any more of that or that. Real marriage provides this, and real relationships provide this, each one exploring with the other the world and learning how to enjoy being together. And you ought to be like this from the time that you start dating her until you die. And then there'll be those times when you turn face to face in your serious courting, and you know that you want to be a part of that person. And then when you marry, there are those intimate moments that only you and your wife will enjoy together. But that's not all there is to marriage. And you don't just give your life all to that. There are other things. There is this, where you're back to back then, and you grow into this oneness. And I would suggest that if you don't look at them as phases, you'll probably succeed. If you look at them as developments, that you're building one on the other, that to this you add this, and to both this and this you add that. And if you'll have all three of these going at the same time in your marriage, then you'll be developing in the right direction. And if all of this then is under the headship of Jesus Christ, you've got what God intended to exist in our homes. So God saw that it was not good for a man to be alone, and he made for him a help meet for him. The Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and while he slept, he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from the man, he made a woman and brought her to the man. Then the man said, "At last, this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of the man. Therefore a man leaves his father and his mother and cleaves to his wife, and they become one flesh." And that's what it's all about. And so we wanted to go back and pick those of you up who we've left behind perhaps, and help you maybe with a bit of your initial courting and some of the procedures that you go through in this game of life that you play in relationship to someone in the opposite sex. And it's beautiful. It's all from God, and he wants you to enjoy it and to grow and develop as you should with someone else as your mate and your partner. May God bless us as he blesses us in our homes. I know of no greater need that we have today than learning how to get along together and be the kind of people that we ought to, so we can create the kind of homes we ought to. The invitation today is extended to those of you who are Christians. Perhaps you've violated some of these principles that I've mentioned this morning, and maybe it's public enough that you need to state it publicly. But if it's not, if it's private, would you go to the person whom you've offended privately? Go to them today, perhaps before you eat or after dinner, and just say, "You know, I've been wrong, and I want to correct some of that." Whatever may be your need, as you look at your life in terms of the things we talked about today, would you use this opportunity, if you need to respond publicly, do it while we stand and sing.
Bring Christ your broken life, so marred by sin.